Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get a premium finish with less odor and fumes for your painting project with Rust-Oleum's Low Odor Spray Paint. It provides a long-lasting, durable finish, making it perfect for indoor or outdoor projects. Save big on Rust-Oleum Spray Paints now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan, and today we address one of the hottest topics in the vegan community, romantic relationships. We answer all the important questions, dating questions such as, should I date a fellow vegan, or go with chemistry and open my life to carnists? Where can I find a vegan partner? Can I turn my partner vegan, or am I deluding myself? But also questions about lasting relationships, making veganism sexy, or choosing to have kids. And to answer all those questions, we have our in-house professional matchmaker, Rabbi Akiva Gersh, also known as the Vegan Rabbi. He had a hand in forming who knows how many loving relationships, so listen carefully to his advice. Plus, two loving activist couples, George and Rachel Martin. You know George as Carnism Debunked. He has been on the show many times, and if you follow him on social media, you've seen Rachel too, and Rachel has the same burning flame for animal rights. Then Tom and Sol, who recently came on the podcast to promote their illustrated book, Reynard the House Wolf. They are a couple of artists and activists living remotely in nature. And every time I look at Sol's art, I am reminded of how authentic and inspiring their lives is. Visit the episode notes and connect with Akiva, George, Rachel, Tom, and Sol. And if you like this episode, share it with your fellow vegan. I want to start with maybe asking you to share your love stories. How, you know, did you meet, and how did you know that your partner was the right person for you? And I think that would be a great way to also introduce yourselves. Who would like to start?
We are Tom and Sol. We live in the Upper Peninsula, Michigan, and we first met 12 years ago. I was recently graduated from the university, didn't really know what I was doing with my life. So I took a backpacking trip in South America, just bought a one-way ticket, and I was visiting different places, playing music. One day I was just playing music in a park in Lima, Peru, and Sol walked up to me and asked if she could listen to my music. And I found out later that she'd actually been following me around town all day.
Kind of, my mom.
Yeah, stalking me. The story became more sinister when I heard the details later. But yeah, that's really just it. Traveling and playing music. And I think we knew we were right for each other just because we both went totally crazy and were willing to cross oceans to be with one another. So you really only do that for the right person.
That is so romantic. Okay, George, Rachel?
Yeah, so we're also an international couple. I'm from the UK and Rachel's American, and we're living in the UK at the moment. We had always known each other in like the Facebook groups and stuff,
haven't we? Yeah, like all of the free speech vegan groups. I knew George. He was quite notorious for always speaking his opinions and yeah, being brave enough to like combat the norm. And so yeah, we knew each other from like since 2017, but we reconnected on Instagram like I think it was like 2020-2021 or something. We'd always been friends on Facebook. We always followed each other. George actually used to post pictures of my pigs and follow my Rescue Pig Facebook account, and like I scrolled through his profile and saw He still has a photo shared on his page of my piggies. And
Yeah, totally unknowing that we would be together one day or
we had
anything like
no
that.
idea. I would have
Just,
never
yeah.
ever thought this, but
But,
yeah, I came out here November
Taylor,
of,
stop it.
so sorry, Tinks is really naughty. But yeah, I came out to visit in November of 2022, and we basically just fell in love as soon as we met. And we were planning to, like, maybe I'd move in July of the following year, but we wanted to be together, so I moved in January, so like 2 months after we met, but we had known each other for so long already, and yeah, it just felt right.
Amazing. And let me add, the fact that you've met virtually at first is very on brand for you, George.
Of course. I have not, yeah, I'm not a real life person. I live through a screen, as everyone knows, you know.
Okay, what about you, Akiva? You're also in a happy marriage. Your wife could not make it today. How did you meet your wife?
So the story is very long, a bit complicated, not as simple as Tom and Soul. It would take a whole podcast probably just to tell the story. We used to tell our story together to student groups that we worked with many years ago. It took about an hour and a half to tell the whole story. It's a fun story to tell. It's got ups and downs and all arounds, lots of drama, lots of different things. But very long story, very short. We met in 2003 when it was through a Jewish environmental education center that we had both worked at. I had worked at it the season before. She worked at it the current season. I came back to visit some friends who were still there. We checked each other out, but I thought she was kind of already in a relationship, so I didn't, approach her or anything, but the energy was already building. And then we reconnected in a different space some months later. Whatever the energy was there, we worked on a summer program together and we connected there, and that's when we started to officially date. But maybe some of this will come out later. I'm not sure. So I don't know how much I should share right now. But I had been looking for someone for a few years before that, actively looking. I was like ready to date, ready to find my wife. I'm not sure again how much I should say right now. Are we saving that more of those details for later, or should I share a couple more details now?
I mean, I won't ask again about
Okay, so then
it.
I'll just say this. Basically, again, very long story, very short. I didn't grow up religious, like Jewish religious. I was Jewish, but I didn't grow up re religious. And I became religious after college and 22 years old as a result of a whole spiritual search. I didn't think I was going to find my spiritual meaning in my own tradition, but I did. Anyway, I was in the religious world, and in the Jewish religious world, you do things very kind of specifically in terms of dating and finding your partner. You know, I mean, it could happen in any way, but a lot of people kind of go through. Whoa, what's that? A lot of people could go through or do go through like matchmakers. And so I met with a matchmaker. And when I told him, like, I'm vegan, I'm an environmentalist, I'm into nature, like hiking, he's like, sorry, I can't help you. You know, I don't know anyone like you and religious, like, forget about it. I'm sorry if you don't, if you hear that. Someone's like calling me through a different thingy. Anyway, basically, I was set on my own and eventually met my wife in other ways, more fitting ways. And that's how we eventually got married.
Yeah, amazing how this went full circle and you became the matchmaker at some point. Okay, so I think this question was a great segue for my next question, which is, chemistry versus shared values. How important is it to have shared values and to meet a vegan? We hear all sorts of horror stories of vegans being with non-vegans and having to go through the struggle of it. At the same time, we hear stories about vegans dating non-vegans with the secret plan of converting their a significant other to veganism. Tom and Saul, this was more of a chemistry story. You did not know that you would share values and the rest of the people on the call. It was truly a value-focused thing. You knew even before meeting that you shared the same outlook on the world. So let's start with you, maybe Tom and Sol.
Yeah, when I met Tom, I wasn't vegan at all, even though I loved animals and I had always felt very passionate about them. I was very young, and I hadn't considered being vegan. But then Tom introduced the idea to me, and I watched a video on Facebook that a friend shared of animal abuse and animal agriculture and all of this, and that changed me. So I went vegan overnight. But I was very grateful that Tom wanted to meet me, even though he knew that I wasn't vegan and that my family comes from, well, we are Argentinians, so we used to eat barbecues every weekend, and he wasn't scared about that. He just wanted to meet me. I don't know. He felt inspired to see who I was. And I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to change my mind. And I never felt that he had a plan to convert me or change me in any way. It was natural because I saw that these were values that resonated with me, and that now I had the opportunity to change my behavior and do something that felt good.
Yeah, it helped that I thought she was smoking hot, and so it didn't necessarily matter if she was vegan or not. But my philosophy is kind of that I think everybody is vegan by default. Some people just they get confused along the way. Like most children will say, of course we should not be torturing animals and raising them in darkness, and it's just the world interferes and turns people against their values. So I think most people do share vegan values. It's just a matter of giving them the chance to remember them and be reminded of them. But at that time in my life, I was in a very receptive phase of just wanting to say sort of yes to every opportunity. And so I met this non-vegan who I really connected with. If it were today, I would probably think of just skipping the hassle and going through maybe a vegan dating website or going to vegan events, trying to just take a bit of a shortcut. But I do think it's great to be open to dating non-vegans because that's ultimately how we can, proliferate our values and philosophy and spread more. That's, the key to some very successful religions is conversion, right? And so you can't convert anybody if you are only meeting others who already agree with you.
Interesting. So you would recommend people to open themselves to a dating life with non-vegans?
I don't know that I could. If there was a reality where Tom wasn't here and I had been vegan for many years, I don't know that I could, because that's very fundamental in my life now.
Well, it's like there's non-vegans and then there's maybe like soon to be vegans. So it's important to know the difference. You might meet somebody who seems like a non-vegan, but they're actually a soon to be vegan and they're just waiting for you to come along.
Interesting. Rachel, George.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't think it can work because of a fundamental difference in values. If I was to be in a relationship with a non-vegan, and I guess it's tried and tested from my experience as well, because actually when I went vegan, I was actually in a relationship with a non-vegan and it didn't work, and we ended up breaking up because like I'm an animal rights activist and I'm with someone who's paying for what's happened to animals. It just can't work. But I do agree with Tom, though, that dating non-vegans is a great way. It's a great way to build bridges and to actually open that up. But it would have to be under the condition for me that the person was actually gonna go vegan, right? But luckily, both me and Rachel were vegan and both very much involved in the vegan community when we met. So it just worked right off the bat. We didn't need to go through all that stuff about who you can't put animal products in the fridge and all this kind of, there's so many complications that arise from this kind of stuff from if you're with a non-vegan. So yeah.
And yeah, that's how my last relationship was as well. However, the guy who I was with did tell me he was going vegan for me, and yeah, we like rescued pigs together and things like that. And then I'd like look at our DoorDash orders, and I started seeing that he was ordering animal products, and it was all a facade. So for me, after that, I never wanted to be with somebody unless I already knew they were like a well-established animal rights activist, like not even just plant-based. I was like very set on the fact that like their ethics have to be the same as mine.
So, do you believe that the tactic of partnering with non-vegans as a way, like Tom said, as a way to spread veganism, is a bad one?
In my experience, yes, and I do know a lot of like vegan girls who have been with men who they've like gone vegan and like getting them to convert. Like George said, it seems like it's easier for girls to convert men to veganism, but that hasn't been the case with me like whatsoever, and a lot of people I've known. So I think it's Tom said, like if it's somebody who seems like they're like pre-vegan and like, then yeah, I guess it's like great to like make more vegans, but I don't think that that necessarily always happens with how indoctrinated people are.
So
So.
yeah, it's weird because I think women are better able to convince men to go vegan for a relationship, but I think men are more likely than women to flake on the to fake the whole veganism thing to get into a relationship with a woman who
Which
they like.
which is like what happened with my last relationship before George,
Like
so.
you do see so many just like creepy guys in the vegan movement, and you just think like, dude, you're not in this for the animals, you're in this because the movement's made up of 75% women. There are unfortunately those kind of guys in the movement, so.
Akiva, let me ask you this. I kind of understand the feeling of that matchmaker you mentioned. It's impossible. Someone who's Jewish, who cares about the environment, who's also vegetarian, vegan. If you restrain yourself to looking only for vegans, don't you have to prepare for a long single life before meeting someone?
It's a good question. I mean, I think I became ready and interested in meeting someone with marriage in mind when I was 23 years old. And I got married when I was 27. I met my wife when I was 26. So, yeah, people knew me. They liked me, thank God, but they didn't know anyone for me. And it was interesting, right around the time that I met my wife, all these people had all these ideas all of a sudden, out of nowhere. And none of them were vegetarian and vegan. For me, back then, I'll be honest with you, I'm a bit of the odd person out here because my wife is not vegan. She is vegetarian. Right? She's been vegetarian since she's a kid. She tried out veganism here and there. And even our first year of marriage, she went fully vegan and then she went back. So just want to put that out in the open. I remember the first time that dairy went into her oven, I felt like something non-kosher was going through her oven. It was like a serious moment for me, really, I'll be honest with you. But thank God we've worked it out. We've been married for 21 years. But even from the beginning, and I say this, I think it's an important point to say because back then, especially, it's kind of like what I think George was saying, maybe Tom. I think Tom, you said this. Today it's different. Today there are more vegans out there. Back then, to find like you had said before, like she's Jewish, she's religious, she's like into like the environment, nature, hiking, and she's vegan. Like literally, I didn't meet anyone like that. When I met my wife and she was vegetarian, I was like celebrating like crazy, like seriously, right? And she, we had the whole like healthy, natural lifestyle together, our first dates were like out there in nature, hiking and going swimming in lakes and all that. It was like, it was so many connections. But it is a thing. I understand the importance. And today, like in my matchmaking work, it's like, it's a big thing. People bring it up a lot. They ask me about it a lot. And there's so many different responses and there's so many different approaches, I literally just matched, we'll see where they go. They just connected like literally this week. But I just matched a woman who I came across in my work who's actually was just dating someone who was amazing, she said. She's like hardcore vegan. He's like hardcore not. And she's like, I can't. I just can't. And even though she's got like, so many other things in him that she wants. So I just introduced her to like this amazing guy who is hardcore vegan also. We'll see where it goes.
There are people listening who are in a relationship with a non-vegan, whose values are not shared by their partner. What kind of advice would you have for those people? And maybe let's start with Tom and Sol.
Yeah, I mean, I think throughout history, in every culture, in every country, there's a lot to be gained from mixing sort of different groups of people together. Like, think of all the great music that's come from, you know, blues music mixing with jazz, mixing with electric guitars. I always relate everything to music, you know, but or it used to be that interracial marriages were not a thing, and it would have been seen as like abominable. And then so much has been gained from opening that door. Or in the United States, we have the political parties, Democrats and Republicans. Can a Democrat and a Republican get married together, even though they don't have the same values? Of course, we see that all the time. So, you know, there's different, I think, layers of values. It's a shame if people can't come together on the animal rights issue, but it doesn't mean that they can't relate on another value of how are we going to care for our children? How are we going to take care of our home, relate to our friends and neighbors? And then, you know, ultimately, I think the important thing is that people remain vegan themselves. You know, even if your partner is not vegan, but you go on to have children, that's great that you can then pass on some of your values to your children, and your children share those with their friends. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's complicated because these days I would probably not imagine being with somebody who ate meat. I think I could imagine being with a vegetarian. But there's just so many levels that we can relate to people on. I think the vegan identity is just one part of our identity. So we can connect to partners on many different levels also. Yeah, I'm not even sure what your question was. I just kind of started talking.
Advice for the people struggling with a non-vegan partner.
Yeah, I mean,
keep being vegan.
Yeah, there's different. Yeah, keep being vegan yourself. You know, your partner doesn't change you. Mm-hmm. But then also think of just all the different layers we have. Like, we are vegans, yes, but there's other layers to our personalities, our identities. You know, I'm a musician. I like, you know, these kinds of films, this kind of food. I like hiking. I love my dogs, dancing. You know, you can find other ways to connect with people. So it's very unlikely that anybody is going to meet somebody who's an exact clone of themselves. And if you did meet somebody who was an exact clone of yourself, it would probably be a very boring relationship. So really the differences between people, I guess that's the takeaway message, is the differences are where the interesting friction comes from that allows for both partners to grow. So I think we should see those differences as a good thing, as long as they aren't too big. You know, for some folks, maybe being with somebody who's not a vegan, that's too big of a difference. Whereas for others, it might be something that can be a source of some useful and interesting tension.
So I get, you know, being positive, basically. Akiva, you accepted a compromise. Your wife did not go vegan. She went vegetarian. Did you feel, you know, tempted to go, you know, further and ask her, you know, please, you know, try being vegan? Or did you accept that consensus, this compromise easily?
It's interesting because back then, it might be funny to hear this, I don't know, but like back then, the difference between vegan and vegetarian was not nearly as stark as it is today. It's almost like two different movements, two different lifestyles today. Back then, vegan and vegetarians, we were like all good buddies and best friends. You know, we're like on the same page, on the same everything, you know, against the horrors of the animal agriculture industry. I went vegan 30 years ago. And I feel like in the last 10 years or so, it's been a very big split, which I'll be honest with you, I think is unfortunate. I think it hurts the movement, but that's a separate conversation for a separate time. I feel like a lot of vegans are very condescending to vegetarians when they too are doing so much good in the world. Maybe not as much as vegans, but still way better than most people in the world. Again, a separate conversation. Look, I'm like hardcore vegan, and I wish everyone was vegan, and I wish my wife was vegan, I'll be honest with you. And she knows that, like full on. But when I met her 22 years ago, again, it was like, we're like in the same camp. We're like on the same team. Like, this is great, you know? And again, like I said, she even went vegan at the beginning of our marriage. You know, she was vegetarian longer than I was. She was vegetarian since she was 10. I met her when she was 24, you know? So it was very different. Today feels different than it did back then. And look, you know, to kind of go back to your question, like, you know, what advice would I give someone who's in a relationship with a non-vegan? Well, first of all, you chose that relationship. You didn't have to be in that relationship. So first, let's just start with that. You know, if you're really against being with a non-vegan, then what are you doing? Let's you know, take a look at your decisions. And if you are in a relationship with a non-vegan, so clearly you're okay with that. I don't think anyone should ever go into a relationship trying to force anybody or expecting that anybody will change anything about them. Anything. Forget veganism or anything else. If you think they're going to start liking your music, or they're going to start wanting to hike when they've never hiked a day in their life, or they're going to, you know, I don't know what, you know, like, it's not going to happen. It might happen, but you can't expect it to happen. If you do, it's probably not going to last very long. So if somebody's dating a non-vegan, or if a vegan is dating a vegetarian, clearly you're okay with that. Right. So on some level, I don't see a problem. If you're not okay with that, but you like the person so much, and I'm just like holding out for them to be vegan, or I know I'm going to say the right thing or show them the right documentary to become vegan, it might happen. It might happen, but let's be honest, it might not. Right. And so I just say, I think in general, the most important thing is with any value, whether it's veganism or something else, to know what you're flexible about and what you're not. Right. In the matchmaking world, we call it fixed. And flex and flex, fix and flex, basically. Like, what are you fixed about? Like, I can't change this. And if you try to change this about me, we can't be together. But there are things that I love and I'm passionate about, but I'm flexible about them. So you have to know which value goes into which category, right? For me back then, like, again, I literally never met a Jewish religious vegan before. So yeah, like you said before, like I might have been like single forever. So I knew I needed to be flexible about that. It wasn't much of a dilemma for me. I knew I needed to be. I knew also that I couldn't be with a meat eater. I knew that the woman had to at least be a vegetarian. There was no way I was going to be in a house that served meat. That was the end of anything. I went out with girls just because, whatever, you know, people set me up, and I knew it wasn't going to happen. They were like meat eaters. They weren't into it. They were making fun of me. I went on one date with a girl, like, made fun of me basically for being vegan. I'm like, okay, can we get the bill? I got to go. You know, like, it's not going to happen. So yeah, I just think being very clear, having that clarity is super important.
Going back to those vegans struggling with a non-vegan partner, can they learn something from your two failures, George and Rachel?
So in my case, I wasn't vegan when I started going out with that girl. I actually became vegan in 2013, after I saw Gary Yourofsky's speech in like 2012, and I tried showing her the speech, I tried showing her the stuff that changed me, and it was disappointing because I considered her to be a very, very compassionate person, and I think she was, and that's why she wouldn't watch the footage of the animals being slaughtered. And there was just a fundamental breakdown in ethics, in values, in differences. We discussed our future together. It just wasn't going to work. Because I mean, when I went vegan, it wasn't just that I went plant-based. I was like an animal rights activist. Like I was on social media screaming this from the rooftops about what's happening to animals. I was wanting to get involved in like street outreach and stuff like that. But look, here's the complicated thing. I can't give any advice to someone who's in a relationship with a non-vegan and they're not happy with that. Kind of like Akiva said, if you're in a relationship with someone, you ought to be happy going into that relationship. The problem becomes when you're in a relationship with someone because you believe you have the same values, and then one of you changes your values partway through that relationship, and then there's often just a fundamental breakdown. And my advice to anyone who's experiencing this, my only advice is just try to get them to see what you saw. And if it doesn't work, I can't advise anything because relationships are complicated. Some people have kids, some people are in marriages and have a house together. So I can't go around being like, you must do this, you must dump this person, or you must do that. All I can say is get them to sit down, watch Dominion or Gary Yourofsky's speech, whatever it is, and that's as far as I can say.
Yeah, and if it hurts you too bad, just you just gotta let them go if that is like the if that upsets you every single day that they aren't seeing things for what they are, seeing how horrible these industries are, my advice is yeah, just figure out a way to plan your out. And yeah, like if it makes your life more complicated, like if you have kids or a house, your happiness is also very important, so I think it might be better to divorce them and find somebody more like you. I don't know.
Well, it's
This
in
is.
those situations, though, it's so complicated that sometimes just can't give advice. Like, it's hard when
Yeah.
someone has kids or something. It's too hard to say what to do.
Yeah, and
So.
that's really hard too because I do know a lot of divorced vegans whose kids like will go over to their dad or mom's house and eat non-vegan food, and then there's a whole bunch of drama there. So I guess just don't have kids with somebody unless you know that they're like you're going to be able to handle that. But yeah.
It's all yeah. It's there's all a lot of complications that can come up. So we're not relationship gurus ultimately.
No, you're being helpful. Yeah, it is emotional open heart surgery. You mentioned a few times that you are an activist, George, and you're also an activist, Rachel. Do you feel like you two being vegan just made you even more vegan, like even more convinced and even more of an activist, and made you radical, even more radical, but the good kind of radical.
I was already super active and like what people would call radical before I really ever spoke properly to Rachel. So it wasn't yeah any coincidence of us being together. It was more that we connected with each other because we were kind of involved in that movement, if that makes
Yeah,
sense.
but I had not done street outreach, maybe other than like flyering and stickering like at the grocery store until I met George. I always felt my place in like the activism scene was rescue, rehabilitation, volunteering at sanctuaries, things like that, online activism. But George has definitely given me like more inspiration to use my voice and also do some pretty extreme demos that I never thought I would have done before. So,
But Rachel only calls them extreme because she doesn't like talking to people. That's what she means by extreme. They're not extreme demos at all.
like we did a Milked Woman art installation, and before I met George, I would never have seen myself like practically naked on the streets with like milkers taped to my chest and a sign that says dairy isn't humane. But yeah, he's definitely given me like the confidence to speak my truth, so
I think it is a yes. Okay, Tom and Sol, same question for you.
yes. Could you repeat that question?
So, do you feel like being partnered with a vegan made you even more radical in your, outlook, and made you even more of an activist in this scene?
We have done many street outreach events together. And when you're with somebody else who does share those deep values with you, then, doing street outreach can be a dating activity. It's a couple activity. And that might even be some potential advice for somebody who's with a non-vegan or non-vegetarian is to invite them to do outreach with you. As a bonding activity, it's like, okay, we're sharing a life together. We might not be eating the same things, but let's go do some outreach together so you can see what's important to me. And I think anybody who spends a few hours seeing the footage that vegans show at outreach events and receiving that material, it will definitely make them think very deeply about those issues. But when I first met Sol, and Sol is from an Argentinian family, And I had been vegan for already almost 10 years. And I should say it was a girl in high school who turned me vegan. I was a pre-vegan, and there was a girl I really liked, and she basically said, "Tom, we're going vegan," and showed me one video, and that was all it took. It's like, okay, I like you, I resonate with this video, I'm vegan now. So, and we didn't even date or anything. I just had a crush on her. But at the point when I met Sol and I was backpacking in South America, and I was just sort of saying yes to everything, I was reevaluating who I was, and I actually became flexible with my diet while I was traveling. And I tried one hamburger, and it was disgusting. So after that, I said, okay, I'll be vegetarian for this trip. I won't eat meat. And when I met Sol, and she was from a heavily meat-eating family, and I lived with her family for a while. And she was not vegan. But then when she started tuning into the vegan values and said she wanted to become vegan, it sort of made me like five times more vegan than I was previously, because now I had somebody who was reinforcing those values in me, confirming that this was something important to do, and it was a part of my myself that I didn't need to try to ignore. And so since then, since teaming up with a vegan partner, for me personally, I am so much more of a vegan than I ever was. And it's like I would never again question or consider being receptive to having a hamburger on the streets of Colombia. Like that would never cross my mind today, because now my veganism is so much more deeply entrenched. It's in the marrow of my bones. So I do think definitely getting a vegan partner, it's like, when you're trying to do any activity or start any habit, if you're trying to be a jujitsu master or whatever, you need somebody to keep you disciplined. It's going to be very hard to keep that discipline up just by yourself. It's very helpful to have somebody else who is reinforcing whatever it is that you're trying to achieve.
And I wanted to add something about doing outreach. I'm like Rachel. Well, she said that she was shy, to talk to people. I'm very shy. I avoid conflict in my life as much as possible. Just talking about it makes me nervous. So I have done outreach, but it's been me holding a screen or holding, a sign and having very short conversations with people. I haven't really broken through that barrier yet, but I'm much better at composing music that talks about animal rights and in a more, well, not a more passionate way, but more soft, like I think it talks to your heart in a different way, or through art, like this book, Rainer the House Wolf, that Tom and I wrote and we're gonna publish very soon. It's not directly like a vegan book in your face, but it has a vegan message that I think that people who are non-vegan will resonate, and they will be introduced to the idea slowly, and then get to meet these characters, get to meet Patrick, this pig who escaped the truck that was going to the slaughter place, slaughterhouse. So yeah, I think that's my way of doing it, and it helps me to also speak my truth in this way. And Tom is very supportive with that. He does his own art, of course, and music that is that way. So we both push each other to do it.
Thank you, and I'm looking forward to getting a copy of that book. Akiva, that's interesting, the intersection of activism and being just vegan. Do you feel like most vegan couples that you meet or that you have interacted with are interested in getting into activism in some way? I always think that we are forced upon, being an activist, and to the role of an activist. Is it a conversation that people have with you when looking for a partner?
So it's interesting. First of all, I loved hearing the answers just now of everyone. Thank you guys. It was a great question and great response. It's really interesting. I feel like in my life, I do know a couple of like powerhouse couples who are both activists, both vegans, both activists. A couple here in Israel. She's a Tala Gibbowa. Maybe somebody knows about her. She actually got a position in the government to be like in charge of animal welfare issues in the country, which is unbelievable. Like an office that never existed before. She's amazing. Her partner Roi is amazing, and they're an activist couple. I know another great Jewish half Israeli couple in Germany. He has all these vegan restaurants. Nir Rosenfeld, if anybody knows him, he's doing incredible work. He used to own all these meat restaurants. He watched one of the documentaries. Actually, no, I think he heard a speech of Tal's, became vegan overnight, and then eventually changed all of his restaurants to vegan restaurants. He's very successful, and he's an incredible street activist together with his wife. Anyway, the reason I say that, they're a bit from in my life a bit more of the minority. I'll be honest with you, like my main life is in the Jewish religious world, and unfortunately, there's not that many vegans in the Jewish religious world. When I say religious, I mean Orthodox, if that makes more sense to people. That's like where part of my work is, trying to bring that voice more into the Orthodox world and using traditional Jewish sources to show that veganism is very, very not only accepted, but very, very supported by Jewish teachings and values in our modern day. So I feel like I don't personally see it in my life very much. I will say just in terms of my own personal life, my wife, though, again, she's not vegan, she's vegetarian, is very supportive of what I do. When we first got married a bit over 20 years ago, my background is in education. I've been in education, Jewish education, for over 20 years, almost 25 years now. But it was really when I opened up Vegan Rabbi about 4 or 5 years ago that I really kind of stepped into that role again as an activist. I was super heavily involved with activism in college back in the day. That was like my life more than classes were. And then like, after that, and eventually getting married and raising a family, education became my activism. And then Vegan Rabbi kind of combines all of that together. And she's very supportive, and it's really cool because we are still kind of like a couple in this, even though I'm vegan and she's vegetarian, because if we have, Shabbat is like a big time to like have big meals and invite people over. And I really feel like we're like the representatives of awesome vegan food, because when people come over, like our Shabbat meals are mostly sometimes only vegan, right? And people love it. These non-vegans, non-vegetarians, they come over like, wow, like if this is what the food was like, I could do that. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. Like, so our table becomes a bit of like an activist tool. And also when we go out, right? Because you might know, like in the Jewish religious world, like things are either meat or dairy, because you can't mix the two. So most people eat meat meals on Shabbat. So when we go out, like they can't have dairy there. So Tamar's eating, Tamar, that's my wife's name. She's eating the same food that I'm eating. It's all vegan, right? It's got no dairy in it, and has no meat. And people often turn the conversation to like how both of us eat and why. So she shares a lot of the same values. And so like we're not like this, like I think you guys in this conversation are more like activist couples than we are, but she definitely supports what I do. And I have to say that is very proud of it because she believes in it and is happy that, so many people are responding to it.
That's good. That's really good. I'm happy to hear that you have this dynamic going on. Okay, a question for you, George and Rachel. Advice for best places to find those vegan, partners. I think that's one of the biggest question I always hear asked again and again. Where can I find that vegan partner?
Well, there's plenty around. I think it was harder for Rachel because she's from the States and it's such a huge country and everyone's so spread out that I think it is kind of harder there to find a vegan partner. In the UK, it's extremely like we're an extremely densely populated country and it's a small island. So for UK vegans, it's like, look, just join your local vegan Facebook group or get active, and there's plenty of people that you'll be able to meet in your local outreach group or whatever it is. But yeah, with me and Rachel, it was obviously online that we got to know each other.
And I, one of my best friends also met her husband, a Welsh man, in like the same free speech vegan groups, and he moved to America, and yeah, so I would suggest anyone who's kind of in a more desolate area without many vegans to join online communities and get yourself out there.
Yeah, and also there's also plenty of like vegan dating events and stuff. Even there's Vegan Camp Out is coming up in the UK the end of August. They do like a vegan speed dating event there. So everyone is welcome to fly over for that as well. So please get your tickets for that and come on over and we can all meet. And for anyone who's listening now who's single, there's a speed dating event now that will be happening there, I think. So another great way, go to things like festivals and that kind of stuff. 'Cause yeah.
What about activism events? I feel like those events are more serious, but there are often, after parties, which can be a good, setting for that kind of, energy. Would that be a good event, a good, place, moment to look for a partner?
100%, because not so firstly, I just want to separate. You shouldn't be flirting and chatting with people during the activism event. We're there for the animals, right? So focus. Yeah. But it's, yeah, getting act, being in those activism groups is a perfect way to find someone who has a fundamental match in beliefs with you, because you're there speaking with a fellow activist. You're meeting someone who's very passionate about the thing you're actually passionate about, and all the social events and stuff with it can come after. You're going to be meeting with a group of people who are really, really aligned with your values, and especially with how outreach groups work as well, because the different animal rights organizations have different ways of doing things, different kind of values, and you might find that you're more aligned with people at a certain, who do activism with a certain animal rights group than you are others, because there's so many different kind of ways of advocacy and stuff in the vegan movement. So yeah, it's a great way to get to meet people.
Tom and Sol, you are like so far away from the city. You are in this, in the countryside. That, for someone looking for a partner, must complicate things even, further. Do you have any advice of, how to go over that obstacle?
Well, I mean, yeah, it would be difficult to find anyone, vegan or not vegan, because we're so far away from everything. But I mean, if we wanted to, we could go to more events in cities and stuff. We just enjoy being by ourselves in the forest. But
Yeah, I mean, where we are, our closest town, about 25 minutes away, has 1,000 people. We do our grocery shopping in a town of 4,000 people, about 45 minutes away, and so there's only a handful of people here. But we know six or seven vegans. We know a surprising amount of vegans, considering how sparsely populated this area is. So even if you're in the middle of, like we have a friend in Kansas City where I grew up, and she's organizing a vegan festival in rural Kansas that's taking place in September of this year. So there are always opportunities if you're trying to specifically find vegans. But another thing I would consider is don't maybe consider don't try to find a partner. Like, let it happen. Very often I've found that when I'm specifically trying to accomplish something or do something, it doesn't happen. And then when I stop searching, that thing suddenly reveals itself. And I've heard other people say the same thing when it comes to looking for a partner. It's like, if you're trying to find this person, if you're going to all these like vegan dating events because you're actively searching, that might work for a lot of people. But also going to a vegan festival or outreach and not looking for a partner, but just going there because it's something that you're passionate about. And then the partner could happen as a consequence of that, But like, I think we should maybe think about how directed and specific we want our approach to be. Maybe it's more about receptivity than actively trying to snag a partner and coerce them into being vegan by whispering to them in their dreams or whatever, like just be receptive, and maybe what you're looking for will happen automatically, no matter where you are in the world.
Akiva, I'm not sure you agree with this advice. should people consider hiring a matchmaker? Because I feel like hiring a matchmaker is like kind of a luxury. That's how I perceive it. And kind of the most efficient, like the atomic bomb. Like, this is where you go to if, you know, you really want results. Am I right in my perception?
Yes, and I don't want to say no, but I'll say this. Well, first of all, in the Jewish world, matchmaking was, first of all, it's a very traditional thing in the Jewish world that, like, you had a matchmaker and they help you, like, find a partner, right? It was never for payment, at least not up front. If they found you somebody, so you give them a gift of your choice, of, you know, because that's like what you should do. But there's no payment up front. In modern matchmaking, Jewish, non-Jewish, it doesn't matter. There is payment up front. It's the whole thing. But so in terms of modern matchmaking, I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of it's like a luxury and it's not for everyone. And it's not for everyone, for sure. Having said that, I do think it's a balance of being proactive, even very proactive, and then totally coming into this place of like faith and belief and staying connected. And, you know, I'm really into the whole kind of spiritual side of dating and searching for your soulmate, your life partner. There's a lot of beautiful spiritual teachings that help people along the way. And one of them is just remembering, like, they're out there. Like, they exist, they're real, they're living right now, they're doing things right now, you know. Talk to them in your head, like, say hi to them every morning, like, good morning, you know. And like, really, like, it helped you to, like, you know, really believe that this is possible, because so many singles believe it's not possible. But again, that's kind of like a different kind of conversation. But I do value the place of being proactive. And it doesn't mean like being like obsessive or compulsive or like making it like you're 100% thing in life. But it does mean, like, you know, like what I said before, like putting yourself in good places where it's more likely you're going to find someone, meet someone with your values. Now, where I met my wife, I didn't go there to meet my wife. I was 24 years old, I think, at the time. I was ready and open to meet somebody, but I went there to get trained as a Jewish environmental educator. You know, I wound up meeting like my best friends and my wife. And out of that season and the next season, all of these couples came out who eventually got married. Right, which just like show that this is a great place for people to meet. Go there because you value this. You're a good chance you're going to find someone who also values this, and you're going to like want to live with that person because you both value this thing together. Right. So whether that's like a job, you know, or you know, this was like a 3 or 4 month gig that I did at this environmental center, or it's a lecture, or it's a retreat, or it's a weekend thing, or whatever it might be, or it's a rally, it's a protest, being part of an organization. Definitely, I think that's the best thing anybody can do, is putting yourself in situations where, like, yeah, there can be people who care about the things that you care about. And I'll just add one other thing to that, is like, don't be shy to tell people, yeah, I'm single and I'm looking for somebody. You know, here's like my top three things. The more people know, the more people think about you. And the more people, I sometimes have like online singles events for Jewish vegans and vegetarians. And let's be honest, it is such a tiny niche. It's like ridiculous, right? If I cut it down into like age group and Jewish denomination, I'll have like 3 people on the call, right? So I open up to all ages, all backgrounds, all Jewish denominations, and then I'll have like a sizable group. And I tell them, even if you don't meet someone on this call, more people now know about you, right? And that's just how the world works. The more people that know that you're looking for someone, you know, hey, maybe they know somebody for you, or maybe you know someone for them. It's almost like a community approach to matchmaking also.
There's something beautiful to that. So I guess my next question is about, how do we ensure that this relationship lasts? You know, how do we establish that relationship? And maybe a tip is to go and live in the forest, far from the, you know, anyone else. But yeah, what is your answer to that question?
Are you talking about from a vegan perspective or for like in general?
In general, and I'm curious, is there a vegan aspect to this that should be considered?
As far as making relationships last, I that's something I guess I can't answer. That's all going to be down to each individual relationship. But from an actual vegan perspective, I think it's just about making sure that you kind of have like, because vegans are all very different, right? And it might be to do with working past your differences on certain issues, because even within the vegan community, we have debates about random stuff like all the time. We're not like, there's a lot of diversity of thought in the vegan movement. So my advice would be for making those relationships last would be to just focus on the thing that you do bond on, which is being against the exploitation of animals, because we can all have these very long and boring debates about God knows what. But I think as long as that person shares that fundamental belief with you, then that trumps so many of the other things that you might have differences on. Like Tom said, you can get Republicans and Democrats can be in relationships with each other, and that's great, especially if they're vegan. And they can argue about who should have been elected. Should it have been Trump, or should it have been what was her name?
Kamala.
Kamala Harris. But the main thing is the animals. That's the reason that that's the fundamental bond that you have.
And do you agree that it is important to have healthy couples in this vegan movement? I do think that there's a history of, you know, vegan couples making progress for this movement time and time again, starting with the Vegan Society. I think it was founded by a couple.
Yeah, there needs to be a good example of a vegan everything in the vegan movement. We have to show that we are a diverse group of people and that whatever we do works in many different ways. I want vegans of all religions, all ethnicities, single, married, all different body types, different political beliefs. I want us all in this movement, regardless of what we look like or what our relationship situation is or whatever. So yeah, having influential vegan couples and strong vegan couples in the animal rights movement is a fantastic idea.
Great. Tom and Sol, do you have something to add?
Yeah, as far as making a relationship last, I think it helps to connect on multiple levels. Like, of course, the vegan and valuing animal well-being is a very profound level to connect on, but it would also probably be helpful to have other interests in common. You know, Sol and I make music together, we go on hikes, we play with our dogs. I think the more levels you can connect with somebody, the stronger is sort of the web of your connection. And also, as Akiva was saying, the importance of food is not to be undervalued. And preparing food together, sharing food, because certainly veganism, there's a lot of philosophical elements at work. But at the end of the day, a big part of it comes down to what is on the table in front of you. And I personally think it's very important to be enjoying good, wholesome food together. Of course, it's wonderful to have the occasional processed whatever and go out to eat, but there is something that's very connecting about preparing food together, sitting down over a table, just enjoying a good old-fashioned home-cooked meal. So that is an expression of veganism, and it's also something that really strengthens a relationship.
And I wanted to share an advice that someone gave to us in our travels. We met this couple that they were not vegans. I don't know what they were, but they had been together for 50 years, 60 years. It was a very, very long time. And we asked them, how do you do this? How did you manage? And they said, never go to sleep having had an argument that wasn't resolved. And that kept in my mind for all this time, and we have almost been together for 12 years, and I can count with the fingers of one hand the times that I have gone to sleep mad at Tom and that I have not resolved it. Maybe you don't need to resolve it with words sometimes, but sometimes just hugging or placing your hand in their shoulder, doing something like that can resolve the tension so much better than with words. And there will be things that we will not agree on ever, you know, but there is always the trust and the honesty and the love. So that's, I think, what makes it work.
How long have you been together, George and Rachel?
Is it 2, 3 years now? Three,
Yeah,
two, two and a half, maybe?
it'll be 3 years in November, so.
You're the youngest couple, so 3 years for you, Tom and Sol 12, and then Akiva, how long?
We're coming up to 22 years this fall.
Okay, so I want to hear your advice, Akiva.
So I heard lots of different ideas, and I know I have all different kinds of ideas in my head, but can you maybe just refocus me with the question, the original question?
Yes, how do we make it last?
How do we make it last? That's the big question. You'll learn a lot of things along the way. It's interesting. I kind of alluded to it before without going into any detail, but even in our dating process, my wife and I had a lot of ups and downs and breakups, even, believe it or not. We broke up a few times actually before we got married. It's quite a story. So by the time we got engaged, we thought, yeah, we went through everything, you know. We that's all behind us now. Now marriage is going to be simple. And I remember this one rabbi came up to us at an engagement party we had, and he's like, I'd love to sit down with you and talk to you about, like, you know, what in Hebrew we call shalom bayit, which is like peace in the home. And we're like looking at each other like we've been through all this stuff. Like, we know, like he doesn't know our story, you know, we're gonna be just fine. And then we realize only later, once you get married, like it's tough, you know. It's all the great stuff, it's all the romance, it's all the connection, it's all the enjoying being together. But it's also, let's be honest, like being in a relationship, being in a marriage, comes also with a lot of great challenges, you know. Even if you share lots of common things, which I think Tom was the one like who said, like, you should have more in common than just like your veganism, which I agree with. You know, and my wife, thank God, and I, we have a lot in common. You know, again, going back to the nature and the hiking and the natural living and the healthy living and all that stuff. But it's never enough. There's always gonna be, and Sol, you just said that, there's always gonna be stuff you fight about. There's always gonna be stuff you don't agree with, you know, ever. So what's the trick? I mean, or the secret or the advice? I think it's you know, really, I mean, I think so many things could be said on this. I'll just like pick one, but no, this is just one of many. I think one of the best things I could say to answer that question is to know that the person you're with, just like you, is a divine soul brought into this world. Right? And you both are two divine souls together to do incredible work in this world. And even if it gets hard sometimes, and even if there's tension, that's all part of the work, right? Literally, like your partner is like literally divinely like appointed to like nudge you sometimes, because that's part of your personal growth and part of your personal transformation, right? In Judaism, we look at marriage as like, again, all those great things, all the great things that we all like say, but also like the most powerful way for, or the most powerful medium for personal transformation and personal growth, right? That you can only become your truest and highest self through the experience of being in a partnership with somebody, because that's where you really get like tested and pushed and all those great other things, right? So I think just like remembering, even in the harder times, like we're both souls who came into this world to do good work into this world and to be with one another to do that work and to help each other grow. I think that could be a tremendous aid in creating a more successful and joyous marriage.
Thank you. I want to get to the topic of children in the vegan community, but first, sex. And there's this whole thing about, you know, let's make veganism sexy. And you've seen all, you know, the PETA ads, and you know, and there is, I feel like, an attack on vegans on that front too. You know. You know, the soy boy thing, and then the fact that we're all weak and unhealthy, all of that doesn't cry, you know, sexy to me. So, is veganism sexy? What do you make of those PETA ads?
Veganism is very sexy. And we talked about this last time, Ryan, but you know, being vegan for long enough, and really probably not for even very long, it changes the way that you taste and smell. And that's why, like, you know, I would not ever consider kissing a carnivore, because, I mean, for many reasons, but because they will just taste terrible. It actually is the acidity from animal products changes your chemistry. so that, you know, you become physically unappealing to somebody who has been tuned to a more pure way of living. So is it sexy to smell good and taste good? Or is it sexy to smell like you've been consuming cadavers? You know, like I think it's pretty obvious that smell and taste, you know, they operate on us at a more subliminal, unconscious level than sight. But that's very important. But in terms of sight, also, vegan diet is very good for purifying the skin, for clearing out toxins. You might not be a heavyweight champion, a big muscle builder, or you might be. Like, there's plenty of examples of those incredible vegan athletes, which we can all point to. But yeah, at the end of the day, is there anything sexier than being true to your values, even though it's not what the masses are doing? Like, I think that's the sexiest thing a person can do, is be willing to speak up and take a position that isn't endorsed by the dominant culture, but is important to them personally.
Also, not eating carcasses is very sexy.
Yes. Not being a cannibal.
Rachel George.
I've never thought of veganism as being sexy, but I do understand, particularly from those who are attracted to men in the movement, that being a male vegan is sexy because we're male vegans are underrepresented as vegans. I think males only make up about 25% or something of the movement. And what it shows, I guess, when particularly a man, because so much propaganda gets chucked at us as men about you have to eat animals to be masculine, you have to kill animals to be masculine, you're not allowed to show empathy for the weak and defenseless, which violates the principles of masculinity. It's such ridiculous propaganda because we wouldn't, you know, if a man said, yeah, I think it's fun to harm children, no woman would find that attractive. But then the beef industry has all this propaganda they chuck at us that is convincing people that it's sexy and masculine to harm little calves in the dairy industry and in the beef industry. It makes absolutely no sense. So while I don't personally see anything sexy about veganism, I do understand that side of the argument. What do you think, babe?
Yeah, I think that if somebody is vegan and you're really vibing with them and then find out they're vegan, I think it can definitely make somebody more attractive. I don't think like veganism as a thing is sexy, but like I think like just knowing somebody like is very compassionate and cares about the most oppressed beings on the planet, like that definitely does make somebody more attractive in my eyes and other people's eyes as well who are vegan. So,
Akiva, I'm really curious. When someone is looking for a partner and comes to see you, do they have to make a list of what attracts them, you know, physically to, you know, in someone?
yeah, it's one of the questions I ask them, both in terms of their values and ideals and passions and interests and hobbies, that. And also, yeah, let's get a sense of, what kind of person you're attracted to, because different people are attracted to different kinds of people, different everything. But I also learn more about that specifically as I share ideas with them, that I can kind of, oh, they say, oh, no way, that's not my type, or wow, definitely, that clarifies it even much more than a list, let's say. But yeah, definitely a part of the process, the beginning part of the process.
And did you want to add something about this sex-related conversation?
So it's interesting. As you can imagine, I don't talk about the sexy part of veganism in my work, but I really like what was just said here. I'll use the word attractive instead, and I agree pretty much. I'll be just reiterating what I just heard, because I agree with what was said. Yeah, it's like when you're like strong to your values, strong to like what's right, something that's righteous, something that doesn't go with the flow, you're not afraid to go against the flow. I mean, that's like, wow, people are attracted to that. That's strength. That's strength. There's this ancient Jewish teaching that says, who is the strong person? The person who can overcome their evil inclination. That's called strength. Not someone who can like bench press 3,000 pounds, Someone who has the ability to overcome their natural lusts, right? And actually, in this week's Torah portion, right, and many other places in the Torah, it equates many times eating meat with lust. People eat meat because of lust, right? And we are, like in other traditions, for sure, right? We're supposed to overcome our lust. And if you can, and if you do, wow, that's strength and that's attractive.
Okay, let's talk about children now. Any plans for you, Tom and Saul, George and Rachel, for having children? I know the answer for you, George and Rachel. But yeah, Tom, Saul.
Well, I never was someone who was interested in having kids. Like when I was a girl, I wouldn't play with babies and like baby toys or anything. I preferred horses. But we still don't know. We will see what happens. And I used to think that I didn't want to bring another human into this world because it would cause more, well, bringing a human, well, they take resources. There are things that need to be done, to exist in this world. But Tom opened my mind saying that, well, if we have kids and we give them our values, share our values with them, we might be raising someone who is doing activism, doing good things, to change the world and to make it better. But still, we don't know. We are enjoying having our dogs, and that responsibility is good enough for now.
Yeah, before having children, it's good to warm up maybe with a few house plants, try out a dog or two. If you can make it through that, then you're ready for kids maybe. But I also understand the perspective of somebody who doesn't want to bring children into the world for whatever reason. I personally think that not reproducing is not going to be a winning strategy for the movements over the long term. That's how the gene pool disappears. If you look at the success of many major world religions, not all of them, but like Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, they're all related to producing and having as many children as possible as fast as possible. I don't think that's a good strategy either. But reproduction and passing along your values to a new generation, I think, is a wonderful thing, and it's a crucial part of the movement for at least some of us to be doing that. So I think for Sol and I personally, although we're not in a rush to do it, and I wouldn't say we have plans to do it, I'm sure it will happen eventually because it's just an amazing way to express our love. And I'd always wonder, what kind of, if we didn't do it, I'd always wonder what kind of child we might have had. So I think that's something we will explore eventually, but I know many couples that have had children in the very beginning, and for some of them it works out great. But for others, as soon as you have a child, it's like the attention that you would have been spending on your partner is now focused on this new entity, and so you don't necessarily have as much time to explore your own personal relationship in advance. So I really value that we've had these 12 years together to not have children and to get to know each other, and then if we've survived this, then yeah, I'm sure we can handle some kids eventually.
So you are a maybe. That's fun because George and Rachel, you can convince them not to have children, and Akiva, you can try to convince them to have children. So, George and Rachel, what is your response?
Well, look, I don't think we're going to be here on this call that I don't think we're going to be able to convince anyone to do anything. But yeah, one of the reasons that me and Rachel clicked so well is because neither of us wanted children. A lot of it plays into the stuff Sol was saying at the start about adding new suffering beings to the world. And, like we say, adopt don't shop. Maybe adopt don't pop could be a vegan saying with regards to that, because there's plenty of children in orphanages who need a home, and we can pass on our values that way. And we would just see it as a big gamble, wouldn't we, to have a kid, because you just don't know. There's even notable incidents. There's actual notable cases. I'm not going to name who they are, of like pretty well-known animal rights activists in the movement who have had kids, and the kid grows up and you've added someone who's paying for what happens to animals to the world. And that's a risk we didn't want to take. And even I think even and this is completely unrelated, but even if we did think that it would, even if it was in line with our values to actually have kids, I don't think we would have them anyway, just with how expensive stuff is these days. And it just looks really tough. Like all our friends who have kids, like they tell us all the stories, and it, to be honest, it just looks like a nightmare. So anyone who's listening who's a parent can attest to that. Like, I don't know, my mate talked about how he's on a flight back from Brazil the other month, and his, you know, however, like 2-year-old daughter was like screaming and stuff all the way home, all the way on the flight. And it, yeah, it isn't for me in any case, but it used to be before I was vegan. I actually did want to have kids, but then many things that I came across as a result of being in the movement has had made me change my opinion. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and to touch base on Tom bringing up that like many religions are rooted in like having kids and passing that tradition down to the kids. I have seen that happen a lot, but with veganism and with religion, I know a lot of people who are raised super Christian and they're atheists now. I know like. Or who dabbled in atheism and then went back to Christianity. But, like, I think it's a huge thing that children always want to rebel against their parents at some point, and you have to deal with knowing that you may have reproduced and brought another animal abuser to the planet because you can't really control what your kid does outside of the house or, once they're an adult, they could grow up to be like a farmer or something. That's a huge
Yeah.
fear of mine. I would feel so bad if I knew that all my work for the animal rights community has just become
Yeah.
obsolete because I brought forth a farmer or
Yeah. I mean,
something into the
my own dad is a fisherman and was a hunter. I mean, so I didn't grow up with his values. He doesn't shoot anymore. He still fishes, but he doesn't shoot because he said I've had some kind of effect on him there. But yeah, that's just one example. Yeah.
Yeah, being a fisherman is in the gene pool. It's a risk. Akiva, what is your answer to that question?
Big question, and super fun to hear everyone's answers. Yeah, as you can imagine, and as you might know, having kids in the Jewish tradition is a strong, very strong value. Even a mitzvah, as we call it, a commandment, right, to have children. According to Judaism, like you have to have kids, you know? You don't have to have a ton of kids. It's interesting, even though a lot of like Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox families today do have many kids. I have friends who have 8 kids. 6 kids. I have a friend who is one of 15 children. Now, that's not the norm, but it does exist, just so you know. My grandmother, maybe some of your grandparents are also, because that was a different world even just 2 generations ago. My grandmother was the youngest of 13 children, and my grandfather was the youngest of 10. They were both from Poland, right? Look, also in Judaism, I have to say it's like a survival skill. Like if we don't reproduce, we're done. Like we're just getting back to pre-Holocaust numbers now. It's kind of crazy, right? So like we needed to keep our numbers up. And I know that's like a little bit of a dark thing to share here, but whatever. We're talking about having kids. Look, kind of like marriage, having kids is like the best thing ever and the craziest thing ever. Like seriously the best thing ever, and like why in the world would you have kids kind of thing, right? It's the hardest thing ever also, for sure, without a doubt. My kids are now getting older, you know, which on some level makes it easier. Our kids, we have 4 kids from 9 to 19 years old, and it makes it somewhat easier, but then it just comes with like, you know, new issues and problems like the teenage years. But yeah, like you said, Rachel, like you never know, you know, where your kids are going to go or how they're going to turn out. And that goes with religious traditions and with like diets and all different kinds of. I'm so different than my parents. You know, my dad thought I was going to go to West Point and like, you know, become a corporate something. I don't know what, you know, and I like took a left turn somewhere and like went in a very, very different direction, you know. You never know. Like, because my wife is vegetarian, I will just share more personally. Like, she raised her kids the way she eats, right? So, my kids are not vegan. They're all raised vegetarian. I had a job for many years where I was out of the house literally for like half the time. I missed like half of their upbringing, just because I was like a teacher tour guide who was on the road with groups a lot here in Israel. Thank God I can say I think I'm a really good father, so I had like a good quality time with my kids, and even more so now that I work from home. But yeah, like you don't know, but I think the most important thing and the strongest thing and the greatest reason to have kids is, right, it's passing on those values. So even if though my kids, right, are not vegan, they know that I'm vegan, they know why I'm vegan, and they've heard those values, they've absorbed them, right? Like again, like one of the big things that my wife and I share in common is like healthy eating. Our kids are all like amazing healthy eaters. They're eating salads like all day long, and so, you see it as your kids get older, you can see the impact that you made on your kids, and it's not only their diet, it's how they are, what kind of people they are, how do they speak, how do they act, how do they show up in the world. And like as we say in Hebrew, bli ayin hara, like I'm proud of my kids. I'm very proud of my kids. I'm proud of how they have turned out and are turning out. And that I believe is a big part of making the world a better place. Is to if you believe in your values, pass them on. And even though you're right, you don't know which way they're going to go, but you do your best, and then you start seeing your kids like, wow, being those kind of people that you're really proud of them to be. It's an amazing thing.
So Tom and Sol, who convinced you?
Everybody had very good points. And, I appreciate the points brought up by George and Rachel about the tendency for kids, especially when they're teenagers or early adults, to want to rebel against family values. I think probably all of us rebelled in some small way. But, if your parents and the culture has instilled values deeply enough in you, like when you rebel as a teenager, you don't just become a homicidal mass murderer because I'm going to rebel against the culture, right? There are lines that will not be crossed. So I guess for vegan parents, it depends on how well you have instilled values in your children, which will determine to what degree they're going to want to rebel. Will they consider killing innocent, helpless beings a cool form of teenage rebellion? I think if you've done your job right as a parent, that will never even cross their minds. And we've got some very good vegan friends here in the area who raised their child vegan, and he's 17 years old. But he goes to friends' houses, and when there's non-vegan food, he doesn't even consider taking it. He's young enough, there's still time for some sort of anti-vegan rebellion to manifest, but I really don't see it coming just because they have invested so much of their personal time into their child's upbringing. It wasn't just we're gonna send him away. Like they actually have homeschooled him and really spent more time than most parents have on their hands to invest in their child. But I think for vegan parents, you don't have to homeschool, but you do have to spend a lot more of your own personal time making sure that those values are passed on. Because if you do just send them to a public school and they're surrounded by all of their friends, and kids are such social entities, and there's so much about wanting to fit in with the group, that it is very easy for maybe sinister values to slip through. So I think it really comes down to how well have you passed on those values to your kids so that it won't even cross their minds to want to murder and cause the suffering of another animal. I mean, our answer remains the same. We'll probably have kids, but I understand the arguments on both sides, certainly.
And I do fear that it might be very expensive, but it could also not be. It just depends on how you do it, and maybe you can live more humbly. The way that Tom and I live, we don't spend much money. We stay a lot at home and hang out in the forest. We don't go out to eat a bunch and things like that. And I think that parenting, there are different ways to do it so it can be more affordable. Otherwise, my family couldn't have had three kids, coming from Argentina, from a kind of a poor background, and all these other families that I know, and they did have kids, and they have a beautiful relationship, which I hope that one day I can feel what my mom feels for her kids, that love that I know if I needed her heart, she would give it to me to save me, you know. And I think that that's a wonderful human experience, and I'm curious, you know.
Yeah, orphanages are a great option too, though. That was
Yeah,
another good point
yeah.
from George and Rachel, is adoption is for sure an option.
Yeah.
And people who are on the fence and don't know if they want to have kids, yeah, don't do it. You shouldn't be on the fence about it.
And if you have children, don't send them to school. I did
Yeah.
I did a whole episode about that with the great Peter Gray, psychologist at Boston University. Go check out the episode. Homeschool them. That's the way to go. Okay, so I think that that's all the time we have. Did you want to add something before I stop the recording?
I just want to say this was so fun, and I feel like we can keep going for like another hour. Really, just your questions are amazing. I love hearing everyone's answers. So like really thank you for having me. I wish my wife was here. She would have really enjoyed this as well. I think you guys would have liked her also a lot, even though she's not fully vegan. Although she's like, I would say like she's between vegetarian and mostly vegan these days, which is really cool to see without me saying very much at all. But anyway, such an awesome and important conversation. And if I could just share one last closing thought, you don't have to use it, whatever. But just the idea that I believe, as again, I imagine in other religious and spiritual traditions, you know, there's this belief that the future is going to be a much better place, you know, that we're going towards improvement and betterment and perfection, even, we can say. And Judaism definitely believes in that. We call it Tikkun Olam, which is called the fixing of the world. We're not yet there, so we're experiencing the broken phase of the human story with all of its beauty and goodness at the same time. But there is this belief that the world will return to a state of beauty and perfection in the future, and along with that, the return to the original human diet given by God, which is completely vegan, which is talked about in the first chapter of Genesis, verse 29. All right. So even though it gets hard and bumpy and all over the place, and are we ever going to get there? I gain a lot of faith and strength from the fact that like it's almost like predestined. Like we're gonna get there. We just gotta like do what we each need to do in order to get there, but we're gonna get there one day.
Beautiful parting words. Any more comments?
Yeah, sure. Just to reiterate, I love the positivity from Akiva there, and I do see that the vegan movement and the animal rights movement is gaining momentum. Sometimes it doesn't seem that way. Like in recent years, there's been a surge of the carnivore diets and all this anti-vegan sentiment. But that is a reaction to how successful our movement is and continues to be. And it's all about, you know, where you're looking at on the chart. If you look at just the last 5 years, are there more vegans today than 5 years ago? I don't know. If you look at the last 20 years or the last 50 years, there is 100% a far greater vegan presence in the world. I think Akiva, you can see that in Israel very clearly. Israel is, from what I understand, an incredibly vegan country now. So if it can happen in Israel, it can happen everywhere, and we've just got to keep building momentum wherever we are.
So everyone, we'll just add then a final word so that we're not the only ones who don't say anything at the end. Yeah, thanks everyone for joining in and great conversation. And we hope everyone who listened to it can take any of our useful advice we potentially gave throughout the podcast.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the optimism. Thank you for the advice and the insights. I do believe this will be helpful for people. And it has been really, really fun. Yes. So thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring. And I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.